Hello, I'm Mark Youngerblood from Pilch Connect, an independent not-for-profit specialist legal service for community organisations. We're discussing the changes and clarifications introduced by the new Associations Incorporation Reform Act 2012. We'll be calling it the New Act throughout this Pilchcast. It is expected that the new Act will commence operation by 1 December 2012, but it could be brought into force earlier. This Pilchcast is intended as an introduction to the new Act for legal practitioners and advisors to community associations. If you are a member of an association or a volunteer and simply have an interest in the changes, then you may also find the discussion valuable. But please be aware that we have produced this recording primarily for lawyers. Our discussion in this part will look at issues in the new Act about members, meetings, and the new financial reporting requirements. I'm joined by Kate Fisher, who's the Manager of Training with Pilch Connect. Hi, Kate.
Hello, Mark.
Well, Kate, before we launch into how the new Act deals with members of an association, let's think very generally about the activities that an association can conduct. I understand that there's been some changes to what is permitted by an association under the new Act.
That's right, Mark. Many listeners will recall that the current Act prohibits community organisations from trading. However, it was drafted in quite a confusing way with a number of exceptions. The new Act clarifies the situation and abolishes this prohibition on trading. So associations are permitted to engage in trade or trading activities that are consistent with their purposes.
All right, let's turn to members. Now, we've had an email from Khalil, and Khalil is a member of Easy English Incorporated, which is a not-for-profit association that provides English language services to culturally and linguistically diverse people in his local community. He says, quote, "I don't think Easy English keeps my details very securely. I know that this was talked about at the general meeting because I've heard that there are changes coming in about how an association holds members' information. I couldn't attend the meeting, but am I able to see the minutes of the meeting? Also, I want to know exactly what information about me Easy English holds," end quote. Well, there seems to be a number of concerns that Khalil's raised there, Kate. Perhaps let's start with the question around what information an association needs to hold about its members. What would you have to say about how that's treated under the new Act?
Mark, the new Act provides that an association needs to maintain a register of members containing up-to-date information, and the requirement extends to removing information that relates to a former member, except for their name and the date they cease to be a member. There's also an indirect duty on the organisation to prevent inappropriate use or disclosure of information that's on the member's register. And maybe that's some of what Khalil is getting at in his question. A member must not make inappropriate use or disclose information on the member's register unless that disclosure is related to the management or purposes of the association and it's not prohibited in the rules.
Okay. And Khalil has also raised the issue of trying to get his hands on some documents held by Easy English, the association that he's a member of. Does the new Act introduce any requirements in relation to access to documents on behalf of a member?
It sure does, Mark. And Khalil is in luck. The new Act specifically provides that members may inspect the rules and the register of members and get a copy of those documents.
So are there any, while we're talking about access to and, you know, taking copies of relevant documents of the association, does the Act speak more broadly about other classes of documents that the association may have?
It does. Khalil was also interested in the minutes of the general meeting that I think he was unable to attend. He's able to inspect those and to get a copy of those, and that's provided for under Section 53 of the new Act. An organisation needs to provide in its rules for access to other relevant documents, which may be financial records of the organisation, maybe other organisation records, that kind of thing. The Act provides that access to committee meeting minutes is only allowed if it's specifically provided for in the organisation's rules. So that'll be something that will depend on Khalil's organisation's particular rules.
Okay, so just so I'm clear on all these different classes of documents, Khalil would have access to and be able to get a copy of the rules of the association and the minutes of meetings.
That's right.
He would be able...
The minutes of general meetings.
The minutes of general meetings. He would only be able to get access to and potentially get copies of, if it's dealt with in the rules, other relevant documents.
That's right.
But unless it's dealt with in the rules, he would not have a right to get access to minutes of committee meetings.
That's right, Mark. There's no prima facie, there's no right of access to committee meeting minutes as against general meeting of the organisation minutes.
Presumably, if an association holds what they class as particularly sensitive documents or information,
yes,
they would be able to put some restrictions on the way that it's accessed?
Yes. And look, it will obviously depend on how any particular association sets itself up and the kind of documents that it will be holding. But I would imagine that many organisations would have a rule along the lines of the committee may withhold access to commercial in confidence sensitive records and or personal restriction of members that has been restricted under section 59.
Well, that's a great segue, Kate, into discussing personal information of members and how an association deals with that personal information. Would it be possible, if Khalil was aggrieved, to have his personal information or to request to have his personal information that's held by Easy English restricted in some way?
Yes, he could. And this is a new provision, or a provision that's new to the Associations Incorporation Reform Act. A member can request in writing that the secretary restrict access to their personal information.
Okay, so once the request is made of the secretary to restrict access to personal information, what's the process that then unfolds, Kate?
Once the request is made, Mark, the secretary is then required to consider the request. And if the secretary considers that there are special circumstances, then he or she must agree to the request. Now, the Act doesn't provide any guidance as to what will constitute special circumstances, so we'll need to wait and see how that plays out. If the secretary does not agree to the request, so it's declined, the secretary needs to notify the person in writing, and the person then has the option of applying to VCAT for a review of the refusal, and that must be done within 28 days.
I'm sorry, did you say the person is able to apply to VCAT on the basis of a secretary's decision?
You heard right. So, look, this is, as I said, a new provision, and it will be interesting to see whether we see any cases before VCAT, considering the ambit and scope of this particular provision.
Let's assume that the secretary does restrict access to information. How then would that member who's had their information restricted receive general information about the management of the committee? Is there anything in the new Act that deals with that?
Yes. The Act provides that the secretary then becomes the mailbox where effectively a member who wants to distribute information in relation to the association's management or activities may send that out, but information for the restricted member's use is sent via the secretary, and the secretary then sends it on to that member.
Are there any other new obligations, Kate, on the association in relation to members that are worth mentioning?
There are a few. There's an obligation on the association not to do anything with the intention of preventing a member attending or voting at a general meeting, unless, of course, the member has been suspended in accordance with the rules. So an example of this might be you've got a troublesome member, let's say, who you think might cause trouble at a general meeting, and you decide to selectively notify people about the general meeting, conveniently not letting that particular member know when it's on. That would now be an offence under the Act.
Right. And what are the consequences of that, Kate?
The consequences are that that is taken to constitute oppressive conduct, and listeners will recall that the existing Act had an oppressive conduct provision which allowed disgruntled members or members who felt they had been subject to oppressive conduct to apply to the Magistrates Court for relief. The new Act deems restricting someone's access to a general meeting to be oppressive conduct, and that member could apply to the Magistrates Court for relief.
I understand, Kate, that the new Act also deals with situations where associations might keep documents or deal with members in a language other than English.
Yes, it does. And I think this is a really welcome change to the Act, Mark, and brings it up to date, which was one of the policy aims of the new legislation. The new Act permits associations to keep its records in any language, provided that an English translation is available on request.
Well, let's move on from members and meetings and documents just for the moment and look at how grievances and disciplinary procedures are dealt with under the new Act. I have here another email, Kate, that raises some interesting questions. This one is from Grace. She is a member of Read to Feed Incorporated, which is an association that runs a readathon to raise funds to fight poverty in the developing world. She states, quote, "I have recently received a nasty letter from the secretary threatening to discipline me for troublemaking. I think that the secretary has it in for me. How do I raise my concerns with the rest of the committee?" End quote. Kate, does the new Act clarify or go into any more detail about what avenue Grace may have to raise her concerns?
Yes, it does. The existing Act states that an association's rules are required to set out a grievance procedure. The new Act goes further than that and provides for various natural justice safeguards for that grievance procedure. The grievance procedure is required to give each party to the dispute an opportunity to be heard and provides that any dispute is to be dealt with by an unbiased decision maker.
Grace also is worried that the Secretary of Read to Feed Incorporated may discipline her. How does the new Act deal with disciplinary action?
Disciplinary action is something that an organisation can choose to deal with in its rules. It's not mandatory to have a discipline procedure, but if you do have one, you're required to follow it. And again, the new Act sets out some natural justice requirements for a discipline procedure. So again, if an organisation is undertaking a discipline procedure, they need to inform affected members of the grounds of the action, give them an opportunity to be heard, and have the matter dealt with by an unbiased decision maker. And that's set out in Section 54. The Act also provides that a grievance procedure can't be initiated while a discipline procedure's on foot. So in Grace's case, if a discipline action is commenced against her, she would not be able to raise her grievances until that procedure is finished.
Turning to meetings just for a moment, Kate, I understand that the new Act has moved into the 21st century in terms of the adoption of technology.
It has. The new Act now permits organisations to use technology to hold a meeting or allow a member to take part in a general or committee meeting. And the key requirement here is that members can clearly and simultaneously communicate with each other. So as long as that was satisfied, either by a teleconference, by a Skype, potentially, then the provision would be satisfied and it would be a valid meeting.
Well, let's move on now to probably one of the most significant parts or changes in the new Act that will affect incorporated associations, and that's in relation to the new financial reporting procedures that are in place. Now, we surprisingly have another email here with a query from a member of an incorporated association. This is from Dave, and he's actually the part-time administrator of Hand to Hand Wombat Incorporated, a small incorporated association with the purposes of promoting the well-being and ensuring the protection of wombats. a very worthy cause. Now, this incorporated association is receiving a large one-off bequest this financial year that will push its revenue up over $250,000. Dave asks, quote, does the new act change the financial reporting requirements for incorporated associations, end quote? Kate, perhaps before answering Dave's specific concern about the impact of the one-off bequest, can you give us any background to how the new act now deals with the revenue of associations?
The new act changes the reporting requirements quite significantly. It removes the old prescribed, non-prescribed association distinction and replaces it with a three-tiered system. So tier one are associations with a total revenue of less than $250,000, and they will continue to report to CAV on the same annual basis as non-prescribed organisations currently do. That is, they're required to prepare true and fair financial statements and submit those to their AGM and have them certified following the AGM. Now, Mark, it's important to remember that the Act's requirements are a baseline. It is entirely possible for an organisation to provide in its own rules for a higher level of scrutiny of financial statements if it wants to. It's also possible for an association in general meeting to vote by a majority of members to have those accounts certified by an independent or reviewed by an independent accountant or audited, indeed, if that's what the association wants to do.
Okay.
Now, moving on to tier two. Tier two organisations are those with a total revenue of between $250,000 and $1 million. They also have to prepare true, fair and accurate financial statements, and they need to have those statements independently reviewed. As I mentioned before, they can scale up and require them to be audited if the organisation so chooses. Tier 3 associations are those with a total revenue exceeding $1 million, and they will continue to report to CAV on the same basis that applies to prescribed organisations under the current Act. However, the Act does extend the approved list of accountants who may do the audit.
Kate, if we just think about Dave for a moment at Hand to Hand Wombat, he's obviously dealing with a one-off bequest of $250,000, which would, under the new Act, push Hand to Hand Wombat into Tier 2. That would probably be a concern for him, I would assume. Does the new Act offer any help for him?
The new Act contemplates just that kind of situation, Mark, and CAV is authorised to declare an association to be either a Tier 1 or Tier 2 association for a particular financial year if there are unusual and non-recurring circumstances. So that would be just the sort of thing he's talking about. You've got a one-off grant or you've got a one-off bequest. It's not going to happen in any other year. It's simply tipped you either from Tier 1 to Tier 2 or Tier 2 to Tier 3 in a particular financial year. And in those circumstances, CAV can say, OK, you still need to report like a Tier 1 or a Tier 2, as the case may be.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Kate. We've covered a lot of territory in this part of the Pilchcast. We certainly hope for our listeners out there that this discussion has given you an insight into some of the key changes and clarifications that are being brought in by the new Act. Kate Fisher from Pilch Connect, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Now, it's time for a disclaimer. It's important to mention that the information we've discussed is not intended to be legal advice, and if you have any specific legal concerns or queries about the new Act, then you should talk to a lawyer before you make a decision about what to do. That is, of course, if you're not a lawyer already. This material has been presented for advisors and organisations affected by the laws in Victoria only. And if you need more information, visit Pilch Connect website at www.pilch.org.au. Thank you very much for listening.